All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Side Talks, where we talk through our perspectives from the sidelines.
Whoop, whoop. What's up, everybody?
What's up? We're your hosts, Patty.
Graciela.
Let's get into it.
Poof.
You love that poof.
I love the poof. Ever since we've accidentally created the poof that one time, I'll never back away from that again. That
was, the poof will never die. You're about to do it again? I saw the hands.
I almost did it again. Oh, my gosh. What's up, everybody? It's good to be back.
Yes.
And Patty and I are here, and we are just having a good time this morning. Mm. I'm a little tired. Mm-hmm. I won't lie.
Full disclosure.
If I'm not 100% me, it's that because that's why.
It's because I'm 1,000% me, actually. I'm the most me I've ever been.
I'm the most me I've ever been. Okay, don't brag. Okay. No, yeah. I had a coffee this morning, and I was like, it's not enough. It's not enough coffee. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I had this whack croissant.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say
brands, but it rhymes with like
car trucks.
It's Starbucks.
Car trucks. Please don't sue us.
Yeah, but. Okay, if you're listening, Starbucks, that croissant was freaking dry.
I'm so sorry you experienced this. Yeah. I mean, a croissant is there for you to enjoy the flakiness, mm-hmm. the butteriness.
The buttery.
And, like, you didn't even get that.
No, I got...
That's really okay. Sad.
Okay, it was a croissant with ham and Swiss, and I already told you there was barely any Swiss. Fine, whatever. I don't even like Swiss that much, but they promised Swiss. But the problem is that the ham was so, like... coiled.
Ew.
That it was like only in the very center because they rolled it so tight.
That's gross.
Inside of the croissant.
That's not fun.
No.
You know what? That kind of reminds me when I get like the chocolate croissants. Mm. I hate the chocolate croissants. Have you ever had them?
Wow. At Starbucks?
At Starbucks. Because they like don't, I guess you have to ask them to warm it up, right?
Right.
But sometimes they don't warm it up enough or yeah, I don't know. But they just have like the stick of chocolate through the croissant. And I'm like, this is just a lie. You know, this is not like sliced pieces of Ghirardelli chocolate inside like a croissant. Mm-mm. No, it's not.
No love. Yeah, no Starbucks love food is whack.
It is.
I'll say it. The drinks are 100%
agree. That's when you ask me, like, do you want anything? I'm like, it's just, you know, Starbucks has this thing where they tempt you and then they just, the food is just, you know, it's like, all right, well, I just spent $5-6 on that.
Mm-hmm.
I could have just made it at home.
Also, everything kind of tastes the same.
Yes.
Do you get that? Like, it tastes like the smell of Starbucks.
Okay, but that's like McDonald's, too. Like, if you go anywhere McDonald's, it tastes like McDonald's, right? But Starbucks is the same. Like, you would think you would get pastries would taste different, but I totally agree. We're not talking burgers, okay? We're talking pastries.
Yeah.
Like, how is that possible?
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really sorry to hear that.
No, but I mean, just a small hiccup. It's not a big
deal.
I'm
glad I didn't dampen your day.
Yeah, no, not at all. I know I seem very upset, but it's just, they did wrong me.
They did wrong you.
Yeah, exactly. But it's fine. But it happens.
It's all right. We're going to call corporate. It's
yeah.
We're going to get some free items soon for you, Patty.
Mr. Frickin' Starbucks.
Mr. Frickin' Starbucks.
Better lawyer up. Because I'm coming.
That croissant is not what you sold me.
It'll haunt you.
All right. Well, I'm really excited about today's side talk because we're talking about Ernie Wong.
Yes. I hope everyone did their homework. Listen to the interview.
It
was a
guys.
Good one.
It was actually... Okay. For me, I felt like a new person after that interview.
Mm.
Because I had learned so much from him and he had so much to say. And he was so... like he was himself.
Yeah.
He was totally himself.
So jolly.
So jolly. Like, we laughed a lot, you know, and, like, I just had fun, and he was a great guy to learn from. So, yeah, I think I'm really excited. I would love for you guys to, like, really listen to the interview and, like, just learn from it as much as you can because he's a great guy to learn from.
He has a lot to offer. And, he, like I said, he's such, like, a a jolly guy, like just he such is. A good time, good vibes. He's wouldn't, just pure yeah. good vibes.
He wouldn't you want to learn from somebody like that, mm-hmm. like versus somebody maybe who is a starchitect, you know, and maybe snobby. Doesn't offer, yeah, like snobby and mm-hmm. maybe doesn't offer as much to you. You have to earn it, which is not bad, right? But I feel like Ernie Wong just kind of gives it to you freely and mm-hmm. he wants you to learn. And I think I got that from him 100%.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about this today.
Yes.
Yes. So we're going to do an icebreaker, of Ooh, course,
as always.
And we're going to talk. Oh, we're in sync. We're going to talk about what we're doing for Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. So, Patricia, what you doing?
Okay. So for Thanksgiving, I'm going to. Well, we always have it at my house.
Oh.
Yes. We're having a lot nice. Of people come over. Last year was the first year that I had to make the turkey.
Yeah, what?
Pretty big deal.
That's a big stinking deal. Deal.
Like I could, like I'm a wife. Like someone could wife me up right now. I am ready.
You are ready. That's like, hilarious. I love that.
Yeah. So I did it last year. I thought it was a one-time thing because we were all in quarantine. My grandpa usually makes it, and he was like, "Well, I can't see anyone, so just make it yourself." And I was like, "Okay."
Wow.
So I was like, "Oh, so people, you're gonna make it?" And he was like, "No, I'm never making that turkey again."
Oh my
like,
goodness.
It's you. So
was it really was it that amazing, your turkey? Like they want you to make it again?
The turkey was really good. Well, he gave me his recipe and everyone loves his recipe.
Oh, that's incredible.
We treat it like a Cuban pork.
Okay.
So it's really
okay, gotcha.
It's simple.
It's simple. Not too
mojo.
Complicated.
Yeah, it's like
a mojo.
It's very so Cuban. Good. Yeah.
I love mojo.
It's pretty good. It comes out really good. It tastes like lechon.
You know, I got okay. Yeah. That's awesome because I feel like turkey is really hard. At least from what I've seen, turkey is really, really hard to get right, and it's always dry.
Right. That's the thing. We inject it with mojo straight into
gosh.
The meat.
So smart.
And then inside of it, we put bacon just so the meat can get softer. Because then we throw out the, we don't even eat the bacon. We don't like bacon.
That's true. So you don't mm-hmm. put stuffing.
No, we don't put stuffing because that dries
that's
it out.
That's
also.
What dries it out.
Exactly.
Because you have to cook the stuffing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I feel like this is like a family secret and I just told everyone. But
well, we can decide later to cut it out.
Yeah. You guys don't know measurements. You guys don't know how long
you
to cook
how much,
it for.
How long. Like we're not going to go into detail. Okay.
Yeah.
wow.
So I'm making the turkey once again. I always make the corn casserole. It's also a hit.
Wow.
I'll be making that as well.
So you guys have something I learned with like Thanksgiving is mm-hmm. that everyone always kind of makes the same staple stuff mm-hmm. but all with like different renditions and mm-hmm. things like that. So like corn casseroles, gravy casseroles, turkey, all that stuff. And I'm always so curious to see what makes it different, I guess. Mm. So what makes your corn casserole so amazing?
Honestly, nothing. It's just Paula
it's
Deen's
just
recipe.
Good.
Yeah.
It's just good. Really good.
It's just good. Like awesome. I think the turkey is the thing we do differently. We have rice
of course,
and beans
the
naturally.
Different,
we
yeah.
have congri.
Ooh, I don't know that.
You don't know what that?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, so it's like imagine a rice with like a dirty rice.
Okay.
Do you know like a dirty rice?
No, but
no. so it's just like rice with beans already in it, so the rice is kind of gray because of the black beans.
Okay.
It's like a
Oh yeah, okay.
It's just a rice with beans, but it's like about. Not wet. It's
I
not
understand.
Like rice with beans.
I understand.
You know what I mean? So we do that. Nothing
wow.
that special, but the turkey's good.
The turkey's good. That's all mm-hmm. that matters, to be honest.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what are your plans?
So my plans are to go to Dallas because my sister invited me to, so she's Jewish
mm-hmm.
and they have a tradition where they make like tons and tons. Like they have like 4 to 5 different turkeys and they like hand like they grow them on their farm.
Oh, hold up.
I
hold
know.
Up. You're going to the farm for Thanksgiving?
I'm going to the farm.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, "Oh, what's the attire?" She's like, "Jeans and
overalls?
A t-shirt." Overalls.
Straw hat.
Straw hat. Make sure you come in like chewing some wheat.
Yep.
You know? Yeah, so I was like, "Okay, that sounds fun.
That sounds super fun.
So I'm really excited about that. And like, what are their like, what's the Jewish traditions and what do they do? You know, I'm curious. Mm-hmm. So I'm really, really excited about that. And they have just tons of different recipes and different dishes and things like that. I'm sure like the staples.
Oh yeah, of course.
But you know, but then I'm sure they're gonna add some of that, you know, Jewish twist Ooh, to them, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really excited about that. I'm gonna meet all of her in-law, like her in-law's family. And I've met them before and they're just so amazing. Like they're such amazing people. So I'm really, really excited.
That's fun. I'm really excited. I'm so glad you like your in-laws and like the family.
Yeah, yeah. Or her in-laws. Yeah. Yeah. They're really, really great. Really sweet people. So I think it's gonna be a fun time.
Nice. Wait, so you said that they're gonna cook a couple of turkeys.
Yeah.
How many turkeys do they have on the farm? I don't know,
but she told me, she was like, everyone comes in with their different recipes. So she was like, they're gonna come in with like 5 turkeys or something ridiculous. I just remember there being a ridiculous number. I was like,
whoa. And turkeys. Fat turkeys, like 20 pound turkeys, like 10 pound turkeys.
We'll find out. Wow. I'll have to take pictures and like send them to you because I've never heard of that many turkeys ever in my life.
That's a lot. Because how many people are you? Enough for 5 turkeys?
I mean, it's gonna be quite a few people. I mean, it's not gonna be like 100 people, but I think it's gonna be a good amount.
Okay.
Not definitely not 100. Maybe like 20 max.
Okay, 20 is a lot.
Yeah.
But 5 turkeys a lot? I don't know about that.
5 turkeys is quite a bit.
Maybe they're smaller turkeys. Maybe they're organic
but
turkeys.
But I'm not complaining.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not complaining.
You're going to have like a buffet. Yes.
Seriously, it's going to be a whole assortment of things. I've never experienced that before because my thing, like, we don't really have, I'm sure with your family, it sounds like you guys have like traditions. You guys do kind of generally, right? We don't really have traditions. So I love to find people's traditions and I like to, like every year we do something different, but we always have arroz con gandules, you know. This year we're not having a turkey because, you know, my brother doesn't like turkey.
Oh, okay. He's calling the shots.
He's like, no turkey. Please, no turkey. Wow. And it is a lot to cook. It's a lot to prepare, you know. So it's like, all right, cool. No turkey. Whatever. Last time we ordered Cracker Barrel.
Oh,
for Thanksgiving.
It feels appropriate. Yeah.
Totally appropriate.
Yeah.
It was fine. It was just fine. It was good.
Nice.
Yeah. Definitely not. I wouldn't recommend it for like you eat it every day kind of thing. The food doesn't taste as good.
No, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the next day. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing with Thanksgiving food is it's supposed to be good the next day.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, for the next like week.
Right. So that's a month. Yeah. like I would even go so far to say that. So it wasn't that good the next day. That's the only thing.
That's a shame.
It is a shame. The turkey was dry. It wasn't as good. But the pies were good.
Oh, what's that? Pecan?
Pecan, pumpkin. I think there was even apple. I could be making that up, actually. I don't know if there was apple. I know there was a pumpkin pie. But it's cool because they have like this huge box of just food and all you do, like you pick which box you want with all the sides and then they just, you throw everything in the oven and it's all done.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
It is pretty cool. So, yeah, anyways, so I'm really excited.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so excited to hear about the farm.
Yes, yes, I can't wait to tell you about it. So, you want to dive right in?
Let's dive.
Nice, let's do it.
Also, just a reminder, everyone, this is the last episode of the season.
Whoop, whoop. Poof.
Last official.
Last official. Least,
because we might throw in a bonus. If you guys behave.
If you behave well. If you earn it.
If you, yes.
We'll do it. You know? Because, yes.
If you earn it.
Yeah, because we love doing this. And we so enjoy having our listeners come back and listen to us. And I just think, too, it'd be great for us to look back at the year. Mm-hmm. It was a roller coaster of a year.
Yeah.
But we had some great guests, I want to say.
Yeah. Our first year. First up year. Up and running.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's actually a nice little thought, you know? It's like, wow, we started in February.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? February. And now we have 13 episodes. So it might not sound like a lot to you guys, but to us is like, you know, we worked really hard on
that. It's a whole lot.
It's a whole lot. So hopefully maybe more. But also too, this is our last episode besides maybe our bonus, but if you are going to the ASLA conference, the national conference in Nashville next week, for me, it's next week right now, today, I will be there. So guys, say hello. I would love to see you. I would love to meet you. You know, I so enjoy like meeting listeners and people, you know, saying that they listen to the podcast. It's so fun. It's nice. It's nice to hear that. So, excuse me. So it'll be great to see you if you're going to be there. And yeah, hit us up.
Yeah. You Nashville living.
Whoop, whoop. I'm so excited about that, actually. Yeah. But all right.
Moving on to Chi-Town living.
Whoop.
Whoa.
Chi-Town.
Shout out to the Midwest.
Yes. So my brother is actually from Chicago.
Yeah, I heard you say that.
And he talks a lot about it. He actually, as a gift for him, I drew the city of Chicago, like the skyline for him.
Oh, wow.
So he loves it. It's like his home. But he also loves Florida too. But I think it's great because Chicago has so many, like, I just love the fact that if someone is from somewhere, they stick it right on their arm like a emblem, you know, like I am from Chicago. I love that.
Have you been to Chicago then?
I've been once.
Oh.
I've been once, okay. And I was little, and it was cold.
Okay.
It was very cold, and there was a lot of snow, but I didn't get to experience it.
Right, because it's too cold.
Yeah, it was too cold, and we were there for a wedding, and we were just like in and out, you know?
Yeah, it seems like a lot going on.
Yeah, it was a lot going on. So I just remember specifically my mom telling me not to eat the yellow snow. And so I think I was eating snow and she was like, don't eat the yellow snow. And I was like, why? She's like,
good advice.
Urine. But yeah, so that's my memory of Chicago. Have you been?
Okay. No, I've never been.
It's a terrible memory, but yeah. It's fun either way. You've never been?
I've never been. I've been wanting to go for quite some time now. But I've never been.
Never been.
No.
From what I understand, the projects there are just mind-blowing.
Really?
I mean, talk about, like, good landscape architecture and architecture.
Oh, yeah. I know there's, like, an architecture river tour, like, a boat tour.
There's, like, so many great public spaces and obviously great buildings, you know.
Good combo. Who could ask for more?
Exactly. And something I didn't consider, too. My brother told me this. He was like, you know, Chicago is also, like, a coastal city. Because of the river, Lake Michigan. Or, sorry, because of the lake Michigan.
Oh, okay.
And he was saying that that's actually, like, a ginormous lake. It almost feels like a beach.
It's one of the Great Lakes.
Yeah, literally. It is one of the Great Lakes. So, like, the wind from there and all that stuff, he's like, it feels like a coastal city, like Miami almost.
That's an interesting point. I've never thought of that.
I know, right?
I think the fact that it's cold and windy doesn't make me think
make you think that. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And, like, super close to Canada?
It's a bizarre thought. But he was saying, like, you have no idea. Like, that lake is huge. It looks like an ocean when you're standing there. I'm like, very cool. Very cool. So I thought that was an interesting little comment he made. But I'm so sorry. Like, I wish I had more of an experience with Chicago.
No, that's fine.
But yeah, so he actually, fun fact about Ernie Wong, he actually won a award for, like, best Chicagoan.
Oh, what did he do?
So he has a lot of accolades, actually. He's a fellow of the American Society of Landscape Architects, a member of the American Planning Association, Urban Land Institute, and Lambda Alpha International for the Advancement of Land Economics. I'm reading his LinkedIn page, by the way.
Okay.
So his commitment to civic leadership is unwavering. And I'm trying to find the Chicagoan. There's just, like, a whole list, guys. You can look it up. It's incredible. Yes, Mr. Wong was named the Chicago Tribune's 2010 Chicagoan of the Year. That is a pretty big deal.
That's a giant deal.
That's dope, as they say.
Yeah. That's not, like, being, like, number one Milwaukeean. You know what I mean? This is Chicago.
This is a big deal.
Yeah.
The play. This is
the
not the
musical.
Play.
That's
this is
so good.
Literally the city. like, yeah, that's insane. So he's done a lot. He's just done so much work. And I think it's cool that he is so active and so, like, he works so hard to make it, like what he said, into a credible career.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and sometimes he's referred to as an architect. But I think it's great that he's just really getting his hands dirty in, like, all of the stuff. Mm-hmm. Architecture, landscape, engineering, urban design, you know, political stuff. Like, he's right. doing, you know, he's a commissioner for the Chicago Landmarks Commission and the Commission on Cultural Affairs. So, yeah, he's doing a lot.
Yeah. That's great. That's great that he does it all.
Yeah, that's especially just to give you guys like a setting. Being
the head of the firm or
the principal.
Principal.
Mm-hmm.
Principal of the firm. And like knowing a little bit of everything, that'll get you pretty far. And I'd imagine like if you're working under him, you're also going to get all that expertise, like just like
100%
passed down to you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. guys, apply to Site Design Group in Chicago if you really want to live there.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wonderful person to.
Yeah, even just the website. I've been looking at the website on my phone. I don't think I've looked it up on like a desktop or anything yet. Desktop.
Mm. It's so 90s.
Yeah, right? But even on the phone, like it looks so good.
It's amazing.
Like the first image, if y'all open it, look it up. Call to action.
Yeah,
look it up. It looks really good.
No.
Like it's really nice and detailed and clean. Like the designs are crisp.
They're crisp. Yeah. You know, I like that word.
Yeah, I know.
It's really visible in his work. Like he is very talented. And so the whole team that he has under him, I'm sure, is just all really, really talented group of people. But I guess one of like the biggest takeaways or something that the first grab for me
mm-hmm.
of Ernie was that he was so personable and he talked about his family. Mm-hmm. Usually like you get a keynote speaker and they're talking about, you know, like their accolades or they're talking about what they've done and all the changes they've made. But he started really, you know, from the beginnings. Mm-hmm. Right. And I thought that it was admirable of him to even bring up the fact that he is like a black sheep in his family. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously it doesn't mean he's not loved by his family, but he is like going a different route. And so we're like his other siblings, and that kind of set the stone, like the foundation for him to say, like, this is why I'm doing this. It's just because like this is out of the norm and this is something that needs to be done in spite of like what's expected of you, right?
Right.
So I really liked that, you know, about him.
Yeah, and especially once something becomes an act of, I don't want to say rebellion, but some degree an act of rebellion, like it must mean that you really want to do this thing that you're doing.
Right.
You know, it kind of shows how passionate he was as, did he get a bachelor's or a master's?
I'm not really sure. I know he got a license, though. He's a licensed landscape architect.
Okay. Well, still, it shows that he really wanted this to happen, even in spite of all the things that were like, oh no, you should just do this. This is easier. Your dad's already like a hotshot architect.
Right.
You could like inherit the business. You could do this, whatever. You know, which I'm sure was like a little tempting.
Sure is. And like the pressure too.
Mm-hmm.
The pressure of like, you know, living up to those expectations and those standards of like, and you know in your heart, like, I don't think I want this, you know. Mm-hmm. I see something that's way better and like more effective and maybe just fit him more.
Yeah, like more him. Mm-hmm. Like more me. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think also as well, like he touched on the fact that his dad was really trying to make an effort to make this into like a real thing, right? Because he talked about how like his dad didn't like that, you know, when you go to China and you buy a fake bag or like whatever. But he said like he worked so hard to make architecture into something like the real thing. And he didn't use those words. Ernie didn't use those words, but I saw that reflected in Ernie as well, that he wants to make landscape architecture credible as well as equally as his dad wanted to make architecture into a credible career. And so he looked at his son and thinking, like, this is a good career. It's credible. And Ernie's like, yeah, so is this, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty inspiring, and just how he is doing the same thing as his dad, you know, but with very different, in a very different setting, very different materiality, very different, you know, scope, you know. So I think that is an admirable thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he mentioned the fact that we're always pinning architecture versus landscape architecture, which honestly is like a conversation that's just like beating a dead horse, in my opinion. But I do like that he said that we shouldn't look at it as two different things, but instead as just design, because it really is all the same thing.
It's all the same.
It's all the same. Like, it's just one is inside, one's a building, one's outside.
Right.
Like, why is there such a weird competition between the two? And he even mentioned like this sense of territory, like it becomes a territory battle. And it just feels kind of primitive, in my opinion. Like, just getting so worked up about, like, oh, this one's better, that one's better. It's like, we're all doing the same thing. We're just doing it, like you said, in a different setting.
And it evens out the playing field, you know? Like there is, at that point, when you say that it's the same as design, you're not thinking in, like, hierarchy, you know, way. Like, you're thinking about landscape architecture, interior design, or, you know, architecture as design. And so it evens the playing field. There is no better than the other. All are credible, all are admirable, and all are necessary and needed for us to have a beautiful world.
Yeah.
You know, so of course, like, we'll never have like perfection, but I think it's just reflective of who we are as human beings, that we just create, you know. And so I've always believed, like, we are created to create. And so I love that idea, is that, like, he evens out the playing field when he says, like, don't think about it like that. But he's also seeing the disparity, right? And so he's saying, like, I do believe that this is as equal as architecture, and I'm going to really make it into a credible career.
Yeah.
And so I think that's great, you know. I love that.
Yeah. Especially when he was talking about, like, more of a practical sense of whenever people do start entering the career and have to start talking to developers and all that, going around the architect and going straight to the developer and saying, hey, you need me for certain things. Like, you could hire an architect. They could do whatever it is that I'm going to do, but they're not going to do it like I do it. Right. You know, like, I have my own set of expertise. I have all these credentials that say, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is what I'm capable of doing. Just hire me.
Absolutely. And the fact that, like, you know, in him saying that, he's also saying, like, educate the developer. You know, he said, educate the developer, tell them who you are, tell them. And that way, like, you know, kind of, I don't want to say sell, but, like, kind of convince them of the fact that they need you, you know, as a landscape architect, and you do the job really well. And then, but the other side of that coin is, you know, Ernie was saying that, like, it really kind of, when he talks to landscape architects, he kind of, like, you know, like, makes them upset at times, because he's like, you guys need to stop walking out when I start mentioning, like, you know, I think he mentioned,
he was talking about the walls, like, how, like,
HVAC or
walls. I don't know what goes on.
Something like anything non-landscape related, they walk out, you know? And he's like, you guys need to stop doing that. You need to educate yourself on these things. You need to become a more whole designer, because you have the capability of doing more and thinking beyond the scope of just, like, what is landscape architecture. Like, you could do so much with learning these systems that are maybe kind of boring, right? Like, no one wants to learn about, you know, boring stuff. Like,
yeah, we don't know anything about architecture.
No, we don't know anything about it. But not even architecture. I think he said something like, you know, something to do with, like, engineering.
Yeah.
You know, like,
all the technical stuff,
all the little things that make your project that you are not interested in, because someone else is going to take care of it.
Right.
You know, like, I really, really like that he emphasized the importance of learning and trying and doing something you're uncomfortable with, because you broaden the scope, you reach more people, and you make more other people know more about the profession.
Exactly. It goes back to, one, not putting yourself in a box.
Yeah.
Right? Landscape architecture is just outside. This is it. Plants, pavers. Mm. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, other people don't know what you're doing. Like, people don't know. Yeah. Landscape. It's like a part-time job having to explain to people what your job is as a right. landscape architect. So kind of being like, if you come to them and you're like, hey, I'm a landscape architect, I do this, but I also know a lot about engineering, and I also know a lot about architecture, and right. I also know a lot about interior design or whatever.
Whatever, yeah.
Then at that point, the person that you're saying, hey, this is what a landscape architect looks like, they're going to be like, oh, you're everything I need. Like, you're exactly what I've been looking for.
Yeah. That's a huge plus. It's mm-hmm. a huge plus. And you know, I think it also shows interest. It shows drive. It shows confidence. It's all good things, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that I think that's something to take away as a student is, like, don't be afraid to learn about this stuff and be interested in the architecture aspect of yeah. things. Like, be interested in those kind of systems. Like, doesn't mean you have to know how to do it like the back of your hand, but, like, you know, and I'm talking to myself right now,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm like, okay, you need to actually try your hand at something. You know, like I was asked the other day, are you a detail-oriented person? And I was hesitant. Because I was like, no, you know, but you can be a detail-oriented person. You can learn that stuff. You can learn about all the fixtures, all of the systems, all of the detailing. Yeah. Like, you can learn that stuff, and I think it's possible.
Yeah, and I think it kind of is like, at least at FIU, which is where we went, they kind of emphasize in studio this idea of interdisciplinary thinking mm-hmm. in terms of, like, more specifically, I would say, environmental aspects, mm. ecology, like, other disciplines that aren't just design,
mm. right? That are related.
But that are more related to, quote-unquote, landscape architecture, mm-hmm. right? So I think just that's... Because landscape architecture is two words. You can focus on the landscape part, which is, you know, the environment, the sciences, outdoor spaces, all that stuff. Or the more architectural side of it, which is the technicalities, which yeah. is the actual construction part. Right. You know, it's more of the practical
detailing. Maybe, yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, if you, I guess you could choose a side if you wanted to, like the more sciencey or the more constructiony. But either way, if you just dive into all the different possibilities or dive into just one of the many possibilities, that'll turn you into, like, a much more well-rounded designer because mm-hmm. you're designing with a bigger, like, with a holistic idea of something.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think so, too. And I think as a student, like, obviously we need to take one step at a time. A lot of the stuff you can learn at a firm, you know, if you know where you want to work. But I would say, like, for me, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to learn a lot about the discipline of landscape architecture and what it is and what are all the components that make it what it is. Like, learning the botany, learning all about the technical construction documents. Like, what does it actually look? What's the base of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what are the bare bones? And I'm like, I'm so eager to learn mm. about more because it's such a cool profession. And yeah. I think it has so much more and it can involve so much more, you know, and we can do so many things. And I think people always kind of stick to, okay, so what, you'd install planters
yeah.
and benches, but and I was talking to somebody about this was that we don't really start design until half of the semester is over.
Yeah.
Because we are so in depth on research and analysis. Mm. And because, like, we're doing things for our quote-unquote clients. We're doing things for people, real people, who could benefit from this landscape. So there are certain moves, how people move through space and how, like, that feels and how that encourages others to, you know, be more involved. And, like, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to talk about, like, tactical urbanism or things like that. Like, that kind of stuff is just important to the profession. And I think that the more you learn, the better you are mm-hmm. as a designer.
And I think one of Ernie's points, like, at the end of the interview was that he was talking about people in his firm that they studied landscape architecture, but they're not working as designers, which I think we've talked about before.
Yeah.
But just that idea of, like, okay, you could study this and you could love design and you can be into all this. But if you learn about, let's say, ecology and you want to go more into ecology, do it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there's no con to learning more things.
No.
So just go for it.
Yeah. I think that's a great point, is that he also brought up, like, some people that he knew that, you know, like, one, I thought that was kind of surprising, is, like, he talked about the Latina, I wish I could remember mm-hmm. her name, but she was into finances, but she got yeah. a degree in landscape architecture,
right?
You know, like, and so okay. he's like, yeah, she gets our money, you know, like, just that idea, I think for us is important to know, because, yes, it is a niche profession,
mm-hmm.
so it's kind of hard for you to think outside of the box sometimes, right? Like, yeah, it's super broad and you can involve so many disciplines in within it, but then to go out, yeah. you know, like, it's like, oh, I didn't know I could go into this. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of brings up the comment he made. It's easier to train an architect to be a landscape architect than it is to train a landscape architect to be an architect, mm-hmm. right? So I've seen that before. Like, I've seen that kind of thinking at times. Like, yeah, like, I feel like in architecture, they can do so much. I've seen, like, furniture design. I've seen bicycle design. Like, I've seen instrument design. You know, it's just so, it's amazing. It's amazing. I think we need a little bit of that in landscape architecture. We need a little bit of, like, this, it's okay to branch off and do other things.
Yeah.
You know, because you can. And you're not limited. Like, you're a designer.
Right,
like,
and that's such a, like, an all-encompassing word.
Yeah,
even though I feel like it sounds very, like, design student to be like, everything is design, but, like, it kind of is. It really is.
You can relate, like, I mean, I don't know about you, but, like, you can relate a little bit with a logo designer, a graphic designer.
Yeah,
you could totally relate, you know. You could relate with, like, you know, like, even a furniture designer, like, you mm-hmm. have to think about how it feels and how it looks, and is it welcoming? Is it not welcoming to sit in this chair?
Yeah.
You know, so you're always thinking about that.
Yeah, design is super cool.
It's great.
Because it's, like, it's practical art. Like, what's not to love?
What's not to love?
Like, it works.
Exactly. It just works.
We're back.
And we're back. So let's talk about an important takeaway,
mm-hmm.
Which is the fact that Ernie came from parents who immigrated from China.
Right. So I thought that this point was a pretty big one during the interview. It was pretty prevalent, you know, him coming from Chinese parents and, you know, being Chinese in the U.S. And kind of having that immigrant parent pressure. Mm-hmm. I know he mentioned the tiger mom, which is very Asian specific, you know, that type of term, that idea that Asians always have to excel in a specific type of way, excel as a doctor, as a lawyer, as an accountant, mm. you know, the standard, you know, like, five-star careers, white if we want to call it that.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And I just think, for me personally, I kind of related to that, because as a daughter of, I mean, I'm also an immigrant, but, you know, I was raised here. Mm-hmm. So I kind of understand that dichotomy and, like, that pressure of having, like, okay, I was brought to this country. Now I got to perform. Mm-hmm. Like, I got to do what I came here to do. Mm. And, you know, I mean, I don't feel that pressure as hard as other people that I know, because my parents are pretty, like, relaxed. And, you know, I mean, they see landscape architecture as, like, a pretty credible career. Mm-hmm. But I just thought it was an interesting discussion that he was having, and, like, kind of just hearing his point of view and how that shaped him into who he is now, because that immigrant pressure will get to you.
Mm, mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah. I guess that's true. Like, doing well and performing well and having so many, you know, resources available to you, and, you know, and I think it's good to, like, it grows you to be competitive,
mm-hmm.
but it is a lot of pressure, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mom actually, it's tricky, because we talked about, like, pursuing an art, you know, kind of, profession.
Yeah.
And I would say landscape architecture is sort of an arts, right? My mom actually, cause she's from Guatemala and she was born there, raised there, everything. Her biggest dream was to be an architect, and, like, that really? Was her biggest dream. But, she started architecture in Guatemala But the opposite is what happened to her, actually, because she, when she moved, she actually moved to Chicago.
Oh, Chi-Town.
Uh-huh. And her, and she was really young, I think. And so she had to get a decent job. And so she went to school to be a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's like, you know, that's not my passion.
Right.
Right. Like, my passion was architecture. And she was like, I should have done it. Right. And she still walks away thinking, like, I should have done it. It's still my passion. I still would have loved to have done it.
Yeah.
Nursing was not my passion, but it was because I needed to perform.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to, you know, as soon as I was taken away from, you know, she was taken away from her country, like, she had, like, then she was thinking, okay, I have to make money. You know,
right.
I have to do these things. And so nursing was kind of the option for her.
Mm-hmm.
So she loves it. You know, she loved it. Yeah. She's retired now, but she did it for, you know, over 15 years. And it's interesting to think about, like, that kind of pressure she even felt too.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, she still looks back and she still regrets it. You know,
yeah.
She's like, I could have still done this. But I thought, like, because of that, you know, unspoken pressure she felt, she was like, this is kind of like my only option,
right?
You know,
and it's hard, like, if you're immigrating at, like, an older, I mean, I don't know when your mom got here.
Was, I think, she like maybe the 80s or something,
like, but like, how old was she?
She must have been somewhere between 15 and 20. So,
oh, okay, so she was younger,
in that range.
But, like, that's still, like, a decision-making type,
yeah,
of age.
Yeah, adolescent, young adult. Because,
yeah,
she came twice, I think. But, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, either way, regardless.
Yeah.
Coming to a new country and kind of having to, like, quote-unquote, start over,
mm-hmm,
and, like, get the ground. What's that term? Get the ground.
Hit the ground running.
And, like, just really have to be like, okay, I'm here. Like, this is the land of opportunity. Let's make it happen.
Right.
And then, like, immigrants have so much merit. Like, the things that they go through, it's just...
so much.
Insane.
Hearing from what my mom has gone through, you know, it's,
yeah,
crazy.
And aside from, like, the pressure of having to sustain yourself in this new country, that you might not know the language, you don't know anyone, you're, mm-hmm, alone, like, you have to deal with the pressure, or not even the pressure, you have to deal with the emotional battle that you're having because,
yeah,
you left your whole family, you know, it's
absolutely
a lot, it's a lot of stuff going on.
You move around a lot, and,
mm-hmm,
you know, I think my mom even went to Chicago, then California, then Puerto Rico. Like, it's just, you go wherever you can find opportunities, and,
yeah,
you know, and that's kind of like the path that she had.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, yeah, I can't even imagine, like, just that kind of pressure,
right,
to be put on you.
So then growing up with that idea of, like, wow, my parents did so much, like, to get here.
Mm.
And you're like, ah, okay, now I gotta, like,
so true,
live up to it. Like, they came here for me and my sister, basically.
Mm.
Or at least that's what my dad says. My mom always wanted to leave. But, so it's like, okay, we were brought here. We have to do something, like,
yeah,
not incredible, but, you know,
right,
something big. We have to, like, be something now. You know,
right,
what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
So it's like that pressure. But then, like I said, my parents are pretty relaxed.
Mm.
And also, it's not like I'm pursuing something super outlandish in the sense of, like, an immigrant parent's,
mm-hmm,
like, perspective. But I know other people that their parents are more strict, like, for example, the tiger mom stereotype for Asians.
Mm.
But my thing with that is, if you brought your children to this country where the idea, or, like, you know, the reason you come here is because of all the abundant opportunities, they should be able to pursue things that they're genuinely interested in, because,
yeah,
they have
that
opportunity.
Yeah, they can.
It's like a different mindset. It's like, okay, you know, in India, you should be a lawyer because that's the best job, or a doctor, whatever. That's like the best you could do there. But, like, here, you could be, like, a really good DJ. Like, you don't have to be a
You're
doctor.
Successful.
Like, you have to work hard. It's,
yeah,
not everyone can be a great DJ. But, like, you can do it. And that's, like, the beauty of this country.
Absolutely.
It's, like, you could do whatever you want. But, you know, it's that, like, contradiction, I guess, with certain, like, people that come here.
Right.
You know?
Well, you get raised with this mentality, at least for me and my mom. Like, she never, you know, pushed me to be a doctor or a nurse or, like, nothing like that. But,
mm-hmm,
she always said, like, you need to work hard, everything, all the time, and get a career that will actually pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, like, and make sure that you think about those things, because it's just because she, that's why she pursued what she pursued, right? Like,
right.
But little, and so when I first introduced landscape architecture to her, I just had a memory unlocked. She was like, how much am I going to make? Exactly what Ernie talked about, you know? She's like, how much money are you going to make? Is that even a sustainable career? Can you live off of that? Like, you know, is that really practical? Can you do this? Like, we're going to be investing so much money in school, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and I'm thinking like, yeah, you know, yeah. And but in her mind, no, you can't, because she tried architecture and her mom told her, no, that's not a credible career. You need to go to America and get something and go into nursing.
Yeah.
You know, or she didn't tell her to go into nursing, but, you know, make money.
Yeah.
So I think that it's interesting, like that dichotomy there of like, we think we can, I guess maybe our parents thought that they, if they came to this country, they couldn't do what they were passionate about. But they were just as successful pursuing what they thought was best.
Well, that's the grind. That's the immigrant grind right there.
There you go.
Yeah, that's the work they put in.
Right. All the work they put in everything. 100%.
But I think also the idea that, like, I don't think there's a problem with going very practical into, like, okay, what do you want to study? What career does that come out of? Because those are real questions. Those are valuable questions.
Valuable questions.
I just don't think, if you have a passion, I don't think that should be overlooked due to salary.
100%.
If you don't have that many interests in anything, then sure, become an accountant. You'll make so much money and it, like, you'll be fine.
Talk about security, you know?
Exactly. Okay, go for it. If you don't know what else to do and you're like, I just want to make money so I can do things later, that's totally fine. Some people kind of look down on, like, choosing a major based on money, but it's like, that's the whole reason we're doing this.
Right.
This is a money thing. We're not just going to school for fun. Some of us maybe, yeah. But most of us are like, okay, we need a job after this. So
yeah, that's so true. That's so true. And I think it's cool that even for us, like, just thinking about where we are, you know, like in our school career or profession or things like that. Like, the fact is that you got a master's, a master's degree. Like, you're not necessarily bound to that. Bound to landscape architecture. You can go anywhere you want with a master's degree, you know, like that says a lot about you as a person. So I just think about that too, like where we are specifically, how this applies to us. Like, I think it's cool that we have so many options and that we're in a profession that does welcome so many different things, you know. So yeah, I totally agree. And I think that even played into we talked about, like, language, and he said, like, and I asked him, you know, with your dad, like, do you think it was accurate that your dad said you don't know anything about Chinese culture when he designed the park? And he was like, yeah, that was totally accurate, you know? And I thought that was not only just acknowledging maybe, like, he should have maybe had been more equipped with the culture, like, the Chinese culture and, like, whatever, but I thought it was great that he followed up. And he went to China. Now he goes every year. And, like, he's like, I don't speak the language, but, like, I like to make myself uncomfortable. And I think for us as children of immigrants, like, we can do the same thing about the culture that we grew up in is, like, making ourselves feel uncomfortable. For me, that's Spanish, right? And so we joked. I love it when he said un poco. Like, that was hilarious. But it's true. It's so true. Like, there is that pressure you feel to know everything about your heritage.
Yeah, definitely. You know?
So, yeah, I really admired that about him as well, that he just is willing to kind of, and that reminded me of Michael Todoran, where he was like, I want to make myself uncomfortable. I want to always be a student of learning and all that stuff. So I really like that he said that. So lastly, I think it's important for our listeners to learn something today. We're going to talk about something that I'm not really sure what the knowledge is on this, but we're going to talk about a project that we briefly discussed, that site design group, Ernie Wong, designed, and it was the 75th Street Boardwalk. So what he did was tactical urbanism. I am, like, kind of familiar with it. You know, we did Parking Day. It rings a bell for me, and I'm sure it rings a bell for everyone else. But I'm curious, Patty, do you have a definition or an idea of what it is?
I could try to summarize it. Yeah. A good definition of tactical urbanism is basically this approach that refers to usually citizen-led change, which is done through short-term, low-cost interventions.
Mm.
And the purpose of that is to promote long-term change, right? So an example would be in Times Square in New York, that whole Times Square Plaza used to be like a place for traffic. Like it was full of streets, right? So it wasn't a pedestrian plaza like it is today. So Times Square Alliance was the organization that kind of sparked this idea of creating the Times Square that we know now, which is a completely pedestrian area. It's like a plaza, right? So the way they started that long-term change that we have now was by, I don't know the order of these events, but essentially they got a lot of people to bring out lawn chairs and whatever and just kind of take over that street for, let's say, a weekend, all right?
Mm.
Like they got, you know, approvals, this, that, diverged traffic, all that. And that simple gesture, people started realizing, oh, I like being in the middle of Times Square without all these cars.
Mm.
Like, oh, this feels really good. Why haven't we done this before? And that gesture started a chain of events, which then led to the Times Square that we have now.
Mm.
So I hope that's a good example of tactical urbanism.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely puts it in context for me because I think the term you've used was guerrilla, like guerrilla design. And it is very much like the citizens, in a sense, like in certain contexts, right? Like you can get the government involved, you can get community organizations involved, you can get nonprofit organizations, or just the residents and the citizens to do it. And so I think that that is a wonderful example of what building a community looks like, you know, and then getting, because ultimately I think the purpose behind this is for safer, either safer streets, better community building, more opportunity for the community to engage and interact with one another, and for them to even choose their own programming. Like, this is what I want to do in this space.
Yeah.
And that really sets the tone for the community. And I think that that is beautiful. I love that.
Yeah. I think tactical urbanism, if it were to be summarized into one result, would be the empowerment of the neighborhood.
Mm.
Because, for example, for 75th Street Boardwalk, which is Ernie's project, the gesture is simple. It's almost always a very simple gesture. So he got the wooden panels that they were using at all the stores, turned it into little parklets, and invited the community to come in and take part of that. And kind of said, hey guys, hey, let's work on this together. Let's make your neighborhood a little nicer. Or like, let's add this little flair to it. Let's do this. You guys could learn. You could, I'll pay you
play
to learn how to do
learn
this.
And learn and grow. And like, they build even communities and better relationships between businesses. So there's even like a financial aspect, like a return.
Exactly.
For,
yeah.
For small businesses.
Yeah. And I think the community then sees the potential that they have in the future, which is the most important part. Because then they start to see, oh, maybe we could have more of this. Or like, okay, we have a few planters here. What if we put a real tree? What if we did this? What if we did that?
Right.
And then they start to get more involved in projects and just start, you know, kind of delegating for themselves.
Which is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's it brings more. I was doing a research, like a precedent study on the Sunnyside Piazza in Portland, Oregon. And what it is like the community, Sunnyside neighborhood, was like, we really love this intersection and we want to make it into a gathering space for the community. And so they hired artists to paint a big giant like sunflower and art right at that intersection in their neighborhood. And they built themselves, like they built, you know, take a book, leave a book library. Mm. That was like one of the first installations of that. And they built, you know, a little playhouse on the street corner. They built like, I just think that that is so unique and special to the community because they get to decide what they want and what's going to build them. And that ultimately is passed down through generations. And now kids are going to grow up with this, you know, this piazza, this plaza that is was made for them, you know, and like they get to have memories of this and maybe implement it in their own neighborhoods.
Yeah, and they start to take pride in it because they have, they own a piece of it. They contributed.
Absolutely. I think that that's incredible. And I think we should maybe start implementing more of that tactical urbanism. And I think also another aspect of it too is that you can do it with raw materials, you know, easily accessible materials. I'm pretty sure the whole neighborhood has duct tape, 2x4s, measuring tape, hammers, nails, and glue, and paint. Like, one person or another must have each of those, you know? So I like that too, is that it's you can do it so easily, and you can do it with like raw materials and very simple materials. So yeah,
which also is kind of what happened during the pandemic. All those parklets that were happening, impromptu parklets, that's all tactical urbanism. And I think in certain parts they're starting to actually be like, okay, yeah, let's expand the sidewalk to these parking spaces and turn this into this or that. And you know, that's all how it starts. Some people just need to see the idea. Yeah. You know, once you see the idea, you could start to believe like, oh, okay, yeah, this actually does work.
Or experience it too. Like go to a parklet and like even as simple as going to a restaurant, like if you go to Wynwood down here, like they are starting to do that now.
Yeah.
And if you just walk down Wynwood and you see like they're starting to seat people outside over parking spots, like you want to sit out there, you know, that looks nice. It feels nice. And so I think that that is definitely something out, you know, if there's a project you guys see that looks very tactical urbanism, then go and experience it, you know, it'll be fun, worth your time.
And I think as the designer, as the project manager, whatever you want to call yourself, kind of going past just the actual design.
Right.
You know, like what Ernie did, he started, he paid some of the kids to actually produce the furniture and make all these things.
Yeah,
he
so
taught
cool.
them, these are the tools you need to make this or that. You can do it this way, that way. Because then aside from the physical space, people get to take with them skills that they can implement in their lives in other areas.
And the developers taught them, you know, like he was like, no, teach them how to hold a hammer, teach them how to, you know, like hammer in a nail and paint and glue. And I thought that was pretty cool too.
Yeah. Super cool.
Super, super cool.
Yeah. So when talking about thinking outside the box, which has been a theme this episode, implement that into your projects. Like, don't just think, okay, all I do is draw plans. I draw sections and plans, and I'm a designer.
Right.
Like, you could do all sorts of stuff if you just really focus. If you have a goal, let's say the goal is to, I don't know, better a neighborhood, which is almost always, like, our goals. Yeah. Like, really think about the people in these neighborhoods. What do they need? What are they, like, what services are they lacking?
Yeah.
What education are they lacking? How could this space be a place to provide them with that? Or even just be the place to like, to talk about these things.
I love that. That's so cool. Well, thanks for educating us, Patty.
Oh, no, no problem.
This was great.
Yeah. Good talk.
Good talk. Yeah. Thanks guys so much for listening. We really hope that we've touched on some points. And if you have any points that you really took away from this that maybe we didn't touch on or, you know, whatever, like, send us a DM on Instagram. You can comment on one of our posts. Send us a voice note. Anchor has this really cool feature where you can send in a voice note and we can listen to it. So download the Anchor app. Make sure that you do that. Follow us. Rate. Leave a review. And if I see you in Nashville.
Oh, yeah.
Then I see you in Nashville. So, as always, keep hugging trees
and stay on the green side.